This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. 2 years of what seemed like constant campaigning and constant elections in Wisconsin has briefly come to an end. Tuesday's presidential election was paired with a number of federal and state races, as well as a couple local referendums. In southwest Wisconsin, Democrats were victorious, but in the end, the Wisconsin legislature is now controlled by Republicans. Joining me today to analyze those results and discuss what it could mean for the future are UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim, Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau, and La Crosse County Republican Party Chair Julian Bradley. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
I'm wondering if first we can maybe go around the table and, after all is said and done, if you can give me a quick take on Tuesday's elections, and of course we'll be diving into some of the bigger details. Julian Bradley, would you like to go first?
Sure. Thank you. Just an overview of what happened. Obviously, it was a Democratic sweep. It was a good day and a good year for the Democratic candidates. They had a great ground game, and they got people out to vote, and that's ultimately how you win an election. You know, you can have as many polls as you want, spend as much money as you want, but it's all about who actually votes. So,
Joe Heim, what's your biggest takeaway?
The federal level, when you think about it, people are going to look back in the election and say, how did this president do it? His whole strategy, which I thought was highly risky, worked, basically, including the ground game, which seemed to be even more sophisticated than it was. When it was all said and done, he carried virtually all the states that he had to carry. He got out the votes of the groups that many people thought were not going to get out as much 4 years ago. And as I said, with the risky strategy, he was the first president since the 1930s to win a re-election with 7.9% unemployment, all of which portend different results, and it turned out to be, and by the way, last but not least, the polls were extraordinarily accurate this election cycle, at the presidential level, down to the state level, even the U.S. Senate levels. They predicted virtually every outcome, which they're not intended to do that, but so that those are my takeaways.
And Representative Dano?
I think for me, what I took is and this is the thing people sometimes forget. If Wisconsin essentially returned to form. These were the margins Jim Doyle won by. These have been margins that Wisconsin has really been hitting. And if you look at what happened, in my opinion, if you want to look at where the anomaly is in Wisconsin politics, it was a 2010 cycle leading into the recall. I think that really, if you were going to – Wisconsin hasn't voted for Republican for president since 1984. Think about that. It makes me question to some extent whether Wisconsin is as swingy a state as people claim. We had, a return to a very, very progressive Senate candidate. I think what you're going to see, and I suspect the long-term trend you're going to see, is that the anomaly is going to look – 2010 is going to look like the anomaly. Now, it came at a very bad time, I think, for my party because of the ability of the Republicans to then redistrict and gerrymander, which created a different dynamic at the Assembly and Senate level, which you'll probably want to get into, and I'll be more than happy to talk about that. But to me, that's what I take away. Really, it was a return to what I would consider what has been the trend and pattern in Wisconsin politics.
So most of southwest Wisconsin, when you look at the federal races and most of the state races too, voted democratically. If you look at the map, I think Monroe County was the only county in this area that went for Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. But then when you look at the recall this past spring, every county in the area except La Crosse County voted to reelect Governor Scott Walker. Joe Heim, why did that happen? What does that mean?
I like to think, first of all, I think there's different reasons why you vote. Some people that voted for Governor Walker voted for him because of his policies. Some people, however, did not vote, voted for him because they didn't like the recalls, period. So I think you have to characterize that. But all in all, what it does say is that Western Wisconsin will vote for the right Republican, and therefore I still think this is a relatively swing district. And I think you could argue about that, but I think arguably Republicans do well in some areas around here.
Julian Bradley?
Yeah, I certainly agree with Joe. Prior to Governor Walker, we had Governor Thompson, who was very successful statewide. So I don't think it was an anomaly in 2010. I do think Wisconsin and Western Wisconsin, overall, at least on a state level, is quite a swing district. And I do think that as we go forward and we start looking at 2016 for the presidency, I think it's going to be a toss-up state as well. So,
and at the Republican Party, the watch party on Tuesday night, I heard from a couple people that they thought because so many people were supportive of President Obama in this area, that that sort of trickled down into the other state races too, and that's why Democrats in the area were successful. I mean, do you see that?
Sure. I mean, when the top of the ticket helps the rest of the ticket, I mean, that's pretty common in politics. And the support that the president had in this area and obviously throughout the state certainly helped the rest of the ticket.
And Chris Dano, you ran unopposed. You are now the state representative in the 92nd district, right, which is new for you.
Correct.
Because you were previously the representative in the 91st.
The district geographically changed. It basically moved from – the district essentially shifted east with the redistricting. As far as the bulk of the population, most of that I actually kept. Most of the people I represented previously I will continue to represent.
So it's not much of a learning curve?
No, I'd already represented a portion of Jackson County, which was where the majority of the population that was added – that was where the population was added came from. So I am – you know, again, though, I think if you look at what happened, a big part of what did happen in Wisconsin was the gerrymandering that was done with the redistricting, especially when you look at the rest of the state and how Assembly and Senate candidates fared. It was clearly because of redistricting. If you were to actually divide the legislature up and apportion it essentially based on the way Wisconsin votes at kind of almost the national level, Democrats in theory should be holding majorities in both the Senate and the Assembly. We're not because, again, because of – now, part of it is the geographic distribution of some of the votes, but a big part of it was the gerrymandering. And it does show you how effective it can be by – the two techniques are called packing and cracking, and Joe would probably be familiar with those. The packing is you – and that's what my district was. My district, they took two Democratic assemblymen, myself and Representative Radcliffe, and essentially put us into a very strong Democratic seat that, in all honesty, would be extraordinarily difficult for a Republican to win.
And he chose not to run again.
And he chose not to run again. But what the Republicans gained by that was they essentially eliminated a Democratic representative. And they know, and that's what you do, is you create a bunch of safe districts. And then you, by distributing things otherwise, you create a bunch of not quite as safe Republican districts, but districts that Republicans can win fairly handily. And that's what you, I think, tended to see across the state.
And you ran unopposed. There were no Republican challengers. And Jill Billings, also in the area, ran unopposed. Julian, I know he's outside of La Crosse County, but why is it that there were – I mean, there were a handful of Democratic races throughout the state with no opposition. There were a few Republican races too, but why was that?
It's a lot more difficult to recruit candidates than it sounds. And a big part of it came with all the unnecessary recalls that we've gone through. I mean, if you take a look at the state Senate, right now the Republican Party is in the majority. So after all was said and done, we retained the majority. So that put the taxpayers and the people of Western Wisconsin and throughout the entire state through an unnecessary burden. And people saw that, and they saw the nastiness that came with the recalls, and they didn't want to subject themselves to that. So a lot of people that may normally become candidates decided to sit this one out just because they didn't want to face, you know, all the nastiness and the things that come along with the election. We hope to have a full slate going forward, and, you know, that'll be one of the things that I work on.
Joe Heim, did you want to add something?
Well, it's it does have to do with recruitment, but frankly, the Republicans have been very good at recruiting over the last decade or two. It's part of the reason for their success.
Throughout the state or in this region?
The state in general. I think they've been very effective at recruiting. But I also think that some of it has to do with resources. You only have so many resources, and frankly, the recall elections, including the governor's $30 million, soaked up a lot of resources around the state, and there was not nearly as much money to distribute. You might have had probably a token Democrat or token Republican candidate running against Chris Dano. Maybe Jill Billings might have had somebody running against her, but when the party could not really support that person with even a reasonable amount of money, it makes it – and they focused their money, and I think we all know, on certain areas in Wisconsin because, frankly, there wasn't as much money around. When Governor Tommy Thompson had difficulty raising money, which he clearly did after the primary, tells you a lot about what was left in the coffers there. And essentially a lot of out-state money came into Wisconsin but didn't get down to the grassroots level. So I think part of it also was this money and lack thereof.
What about voter turnout? I mean, it was very high. In La Crosse County, it was almost 85%. I think the highest county was Fond du Lac that had 92% voter turnout. Was that surprising to anyone? I know there were a lot of skeptics beforehand, but then the day came and...
Not really. I mean, Wisconsin's traditionally had very high turnout during presidential years. Quite frankly, as a Democrat, what I find frustrating is if we had that kind of turnout in the off-year elections, if you often see that happen, you see the off-year elections, Republicans tend to do better as traditionally in Wisconsin, and it's because I analyzed my own district. We looked at that, and we see that there does tend to be more Democratic drop-off in off-year elections for any whatever the reasons are. But it is to me, it's a frustrating thing because, you know, if folks would come out and vote as consistently do in the presidential years, I think we would be looking at a very different state in many respects. But that's the way it goes, and you know, people are more excited and willing to seem to get out to come out and vote for president. Just it's the way it is.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau, La Crosse County Republican Party Chair Julianne Bradley, and UW-La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim. I heard from a number of people. I was at the Democrats and the Republicans watch parties on Tuesday night here in La Crosse, and a lot of candidates and also volunteers, supporters were saying that, okay, now that the election is said and done, we hope that Republicans and Democrats can finally get along. I mean, I know that politicians like talking about that, but it's a different thing between talking the talk and walking the walk. Congressman Kind was actually one person who talked about this, and he's said this before, saying, you know, he's hoping that Democrats and Republicans can get along. I'm going to play a soundbite from him, and we did talk about this before President Obama was declared the winner, so here it is.
Well, I hope if it is a President Obama victory tonight that my Republican colleagues will give him a second chance and honestly try to work across the aisle and find some bipartisan compromise on some of these big issues. I know many of them were devoted to see him be a one-term president, but if he is reelected, he will be president of the United States for the next 4 years. We can't afford to squander that time when it comes to the economy, when it comes to the budget deficits, when it comes to the security of our nation. We've got to start coming together again as Americans. I know I'm tired of the hyper-partisanship and how polarized it's been, and I think the typical person here in Wisconsin feels the same way.
That was Congressman Ron Kind of La Crosse, who was reelected this week to the House of Representatives. Joe Heim, is there hope for national and state bipartisanship?
I'm an eternal optimist. I've always been. I always think things are going to be better. National level, I think everybody knows that the last 2 years, the Republicans, and especially the House of Representatives, but also in the Senate, it was anything but Obama and blocking virtually anything he did, totally obstructing anything that even when they voted against veterans' jobs in September, I was just appalled. The Senate, I'm talking about. That was to get rid of Obama. They did not want Obama to have any victories. I do think the next time around, they may think to themselves, well, it didn't work. Let's try something else. Let's accomplish some things. This was a do-nothing Congress the last 2 years. And I think this, if they're wise, they will start accomplishing some things and start reaching out, maybe working across the aisle a little bit more at the federal level. It ain't going to get rid of Obama anymore because he's there. So you might as well work with him, do something for the good. These people have to run for re-election in 2 years, and they better start thinking about it. At the state level, actually, I think the same thing is true. The governor, I think, would find it somewhat difficult to run the same things that he ran his first year. I think he has to start reaching across the aisle as well. He's going to be up for re-election in 2 years. Those people that voted against the recall are not necessarily going to vote for him in the next election. So I think he has to reach across and essentially look at least like he's working with Democrats as well.
Julianne Bradley, I've heard you almost encourage members of your party that they should work across the aisle.
Absolutely. You know what? It's time for leaders to lead, and it's time for the rhetoric to stop. We've been through this, you know, 2 years. Since 2010, it's been a nonstop campaign, a nonstop election. We chose people that we expect to lead, and now it's time to lead. You know, I'm leading my party locally, and my goal and our goal is to reach back across the aisle. We talked about this after the recall. It's very important to get to know your neighbors again. People stopped talking to their neighbors, or you know, they put up the yard signs, and they stopped. They would delete people on social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter, etc., because they didn't like the things they were saying. These are people that you know they may have gone to grade school with. It's time for all of that to stop. And I'm looking to Governor Walker and his administration, and I'm looking to our local leaders, our local elected officials. Including Rep. Dano, to be a leader, reach across the aisle, you know, get things done that we need done here in the state of Wisconsin and at the national level. I'm with Joe. I'm an eternal optimist also. I believe it's possible. I believe that if we truly want it to work, we'll make it work. And the reason it doesn't is because nobody's not taking that leadership. They're not taking that step forward and saying, okay, here we go. Let's do this.
Representative Dano, when you're on the assembly floor, when you're meeting with other members of the legislature in Madison, do you have any sense that things will get better?
I always prided myself on being trying to be as bipartisan as possible, and I do. You know, I have the perspective of having served both in the majority my first session and then a minority my second. And I have to be blunt here. I never treated, nor did I think when we were in the majority, we treat our colleagues with the same amount of disrespect and animosity that we were treated with when we were in the minority. And you have to understand the way the assembly is and the Senate are structured. Virtually all the power rests with the majority. When you are in the majority, you control committee assignments, appointments, staffing, everything, literally who gets coffee. I mean, and in the assembly, particularly the speaker is an extraordinarily powerful position. And the speaker sets the tone. And I do recall when Speaker Sheridan came in, he spoke in, during my first session, spoke in terms of we didn't do some of the things like boot people out of offices and some of the very petty things that often can create hard feelings. And then when the last session happened, we saw, you know, what I considered a very radical, very extreme agenda get pushed through in contravention of all of the traditions of comedy and willingness to debate and do the sort of things that are supposed to happen. So but what I am ultimately saying, though, and if you want to demonstrate bipartisanship, that tone and that tenor is set by the party that controls the chamber because they have the ability to do it. The speaker can literally say to his members, we are going to behave in a way that is in keeping with the traditions of this chamber, and we're going to be good, decent people about this. And they set the tone. And bluntly, that tone was not set. We had 30 new Republican members came in that had, quite frankly, no understanding of the traditions of the body. And even me, having only been there a single term before them, was just shocked at some of the things that happened. So I'm hoping whoever the next Speaker of the Assembly is, I'm presuming it will be Representative Voss. I'm hoping he will reach out to us, and I'm more than happy to sit down and work with him. And I've spoken with Robin several times. I've socialized with him. I enjoy drinking beers with him at the Inn on the Park. And I like Robin on a personal level. He's a very pleasant, hail fellow, well met. It's going to be, you know, the tone he chooses to set, we'll see. And I'm hoping it will be a good tone. I want it to be a good tone because I do think we need to work together. And I was happy to cross the aisle and vote with my colleagues, especially if they're willing to do some of the things like work with us on amendments. The chamber is supposed to be a deliberative body where, you know, you've got a small problem with this bill. I don't have, you know, can we make some modifications so that you can get some Democrats on board with it? And maybe not everybody, but get enough of us that we can make this a bipartisan. So it's going to be interesting. I'm hopeful. But it is going to be up to the majority party and the governor to set the tone, and we'll see.
Julian Bradley, you're shaking your head.
I guess I disagree with that. It's not just going to be up to the, to them. I mean, you ran unopposed, but you were sent there in 2008, 2010 to be a leader. I think if you reach across the aisle and you make it known that you're doing so, I think, you know, leaders find a way to lead is the bottom line. And I'm hopeful, as you are, that our governor and the next speaker and the majority will set a tone of working together. But if they don't, I think it would be, you know, most beneficial to for all the rest of our elected officials, and not just you, but, you know, across the state, statewide, Republicans and Democrats, to call out that, you know, you're not working in the bipartisan fashion that we need you to, and, you know, work to get things done for the people in the state.
Well, again, and that's, again, that it, I am willing, I've always been willing to do that, and I will be, but again, when you control the votes, when you control everything, you have the ability to say, we will accept amendments. We will work with you on bills that you that we can work together on. We will not bury certain bills in committee and say they aren't going to advance because so-and-so is the author of that bill. Steve Doyle had some very good bills that, quite frankly, should have been moved forward by because they were bills Republicans can support, but because he was a Democratic author on the bill, it didn't move. I mean, and again, that's where the speaker and the committee chairs, who are the majority party, make the choice to do these things. And again, I'm willing to do it. It will be up to the majority party whether they want to. They control the structures and the institutional structures of that building. And so in a sense, they will be the ones that ultimately set that tone because they have the power to do
so. Julian Bradley and then Joe Heim.
Sure. I just hope I don't know. It doesn't seem like a sound commitment, and I certainly hope it is. But you know, it seems like we're looking at outs and placing blame. But you have the media at your advantage. You're able to bring it up to anybody. You know, you write op-eds, et cetera, and say, you know, this is what's happening, and that's, I think, the new expectation. And I think those are things that we need to do. And I'm talking about my own party not working with you, sir. If they're not working with you, I would hope that you would expose that, especially on something that you think is going to be for the best. You know, I know I'm not alone. We don't want to see outs. We don't want to see, you know, passing the blame and remembering that and taking it forward into the next session. You know, that was a big thing for the governor, and we've talked about that before as well. The next session needs to be about getting back to work, and we have to have a short memory in order to do that.
Joe Heim?
Well, I remember the comment that Representative Daniel said about, you know, that we pulled back from the 2010 election. That was one end of the extreme. I believe in pendulum swinging in politics. We're now a purple state, basically, but if the legislature continued on the same path, in 2 years from now, I think the public would resent that. I'm not dealing with redistricting and that kind of stuff, but I would tend to think that accomplishments are important. And if they don't solve, we don't solve some of the problems in the state of Wisconsin, which are pretty serious, I would think the pendulum would continue to swing in that direction. In other words, in the Democratic direction.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim, Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau, and La Crosse County Republican Party Chair Julian Bradley. On Tuesday night, I talked with Republican Bill Feehan, who ran for the 32nd State Senate District race, but he lost to incumbent Democrat Jennifer Schilling. Even though he was obviously personally disappointed, he did sound pretty optimistic as far as what direction the state Senate, the state assembly, and Governor Walker was going to take the state in. I'm wondering if we can play that bite.
I would say that people can watch for some kind of tax reform coming out of that. I'm hopeful that we'll see recall reform as well as, you know, I'm hoping that they're going to pass a better permitting process for iron mining. But, yeah, I think that that's great. It means that we're not stuck. We can move ahead with the legislative agenda.
Julian Bradley, I know you also echoed some of his comments that night as well. I'm wondering if you can just elaborate a little more on what Mr. Feehan said.
Sure. Well, he was talking about, you know, trying to get everything moving forward again. I mean, that's ultimately where we want to be. Things slowed down a lot during the recall process. People like Senator Kopanky were booted out of office for one vote. And that kind of slowed things down. And I think it has a lot of people nervous about, you know, doing what they said they do, because they, instead of waiting for the next election or having an opportunity to, you know, enact further legislation, which is what they were sent to do, they're getting kicked out. And, you know, Bill was talking about, you know, mining. That's going to bring a lot of jobs to the state of Wisconsin. So we're very hopeful that'll be brought up. And a lot of the other issues facing the state. But first and foremost, there's still jobs. You know, that's still an issue. It was an issue in 10. It was an issue in 11. It's an issue now. So that's what he's talking about is getting people back to work. And that's his hope for the next Senate session, assembly session, and for our governor.
Representative Chris Dano, when you hear that, the mining, the recall reform, do you see that as something that could go through?
Well, they control the votes. They have the votes to enact whatever agenda they choose to enact. 60 votes in the assembly, at least my right now, I think. 17, possibly 18 in the Senate. The Republicans can enact their agenda. That being said, they will own it. You know, the one thing especially, and I have to say this about mining, if mining was the great economic panacea that they claim it is, Appalachia should be the wealthiest part of the country. It should be. They've been mining there for hundreds of years now, and it should be the wealthiest part of the country. So that mine is not going to be any sort of great guarantee of wonderful, long, yeah, it will definitely bring some potential economic benefits, but is no sort of panacea for what ails Wisconsin. But no, the Republicans, clearly, they can enact their agenda. They have the votes. I hope they don't pursue a similar agenda to the one they pursued last time. Take account of the fact that many of the major bills that were passed in this last legislative session are still tied up in the courts. Now, how the Supreme Court will ultimately rule on them is hard to say. But
you're
many
referring to like voter ID.
Voter ID, Act 10, the power grab by the administration by taking rules-making authority away from DPI. A lot of those bills are tied up in the courts. So, you know, it wasn't like – and again, partly it becomes – because this is one of the things I did see. A lot of very poorly written – and I'm not talking just about Act 10, but any number of bills that I thought were poorly constructed, rushed through – jam through in an attempt to move them through quickly because it was in pursuit of a fairly narrow ideological agenda instead of taking a deep breath and saying, what are we really looking to accomplish here? The wolf hunting bill is a good example of that. Again, part of it is tied up in the courts because they were unwilling to sit down with actual biologists who understand these creatures and work out something that was probably a little more reasonable. Now, I voted for the bill in the end because I felt that we made enough changes, and I also felt, if necessary, the courts probably would step in. But those are some of the kinds of things that I'm talking about. And again, it's because we're supposed to have a deliberative process, especially at the committee level, instead of, hey, these interest groups want it. The mining bill was a classic example. That bill, the original bill was written by the company, and that was, I thought, appalling. And that's why, rightly, Senator Schultz, I think, was recognized that it was a real problem. So again, the Republicans, yeah, they have the votes to enact their majority, their agenda. It's going to be up to them. I'm willing to work with them on these things, but they've got to be willing to listen to us, and I'm hoping they will. Again, we'll see when January comes. And to me, we can talk all we want about bipartisanship when we're back home in the district. It's when we're in Madison, and if it really happens, that's where we really see what's going to happen.
Joe Heim, with the Republicans controlling the legislature, I mean, does that mean that every bill they want passed through will go through, or?
Not normally. The Republicans are better at party unity, however, than the Democrats are.
That's right.
And they have been able to exert strong discipline. I know for a fact that, Feather, there's a book coming out about Act 10 and the recall period by two journalists in Milwaukee. And one of their chapters, which I happen to read, talked about the fact that when the Act 10 and the collective bargaining stuff was initially sprung on the legislature, there was considerable opposition amongst the Republicans. That was all kind of corralled in as time went on, and basically they voted in unison for the most part.
In other words, even locally, we all remember Dan Kopenke held out for a while.
Yeah, well, Dale Schultz was an exception, obviously. But what I'm getting at is that people will vote their constituency at some point or another, and party unity doesn't always hold when, in fact, there are issues that are of very local concern. I do agree about the mining issue. I think I've kept track of that fairly well. That my understanding is the if there are going to be a lot of jobs, we're not talking about next year or even the year after. It's going to take many years before that happens. And I also understand that Native Americans may have a veto power over the whole thing.
That's right.
So it's this may give some indication of whether or not the parties can get together on a proposal which would be acceptable to both Democrats and Republicans and the Native Americans in the North. It would be a symbolic thing, perhaps, because it is going to take years before those jobs to show up, but that may be an indication of how things are going. I'm sort of hoping they do that fairly early.
And Representative Dana, what else would you personally like to accomplish, and maybe we compare that with what else will happen in the next legislative session?
The one thing I have always been working on, and I think is going to be one of the most, is still, it's been sitting out there for close to 20 years now, is school funding reform. How we fund our local schools is broken. And really, they say any model that's over 5 years old needs to be go back and tinkered with, and ours is pushing 20. It's fundamentally unfair to rural districts. It's unfair to urban districts. It's traditionally been beneficial to wealthy suburban districts who don't need the kind of state aids that those other districts do. I really think we need to take a hard look at it. However, and this is the political problem about it, that model basically benefits the most strongest Republican part of the state, which is the wealthy suburban ring around Milwaukee. Those are the parts of the state that have benefited the most from that school funding formula model, and that's where the bulk of the Republican caucus and its great strength in the state is. That's going to tell me a lot, too. Are they willing to sort of gore their own oxes in an attempt to make a formula that's better and fairer for the rest of the state? Again, we'll see, and that's been one of the problems in getting the funding formula fixed. I think we need to build some kind of income some sort of part of the formula that takes into account the incomes of the people in those school districts as part of the state aid formula. I think that's critical because property values often are very deceptive, property values relative to the number of people. It, again, penalizes rural districts, penalizes kind of touristy areas to the detriment of often the people that live there aren't that wealthy. So that, to me, if we could figure out a solution to that, and if there, I would love to come up with a great bipartisan deal that would make it fairer for particularly the parts of the state that have been penalized for it. Boy, I would, if we can dig into that, that would show me, if the governor was willing to work on that, that would tell me a lot.
Julian Bradley, yep. Do you have any sense that Republicans want to look into this also?
I'm sure they do. You know, the funding formula has been up for discussion quite a bit. And I think it's, you know, Representative Dano mentioned that it's, you know, it benefits a lot of the Republican districts. But anything that's older than 5 years for a funding formula is outdated. Well, 2 years ago, Jim Doyle was still governor. And, you know, if you can't just pass the buck onto the current administration or just a previous administration. It comes down to let's everybody get together and work on this. If both parties agree that there's an issue with the formula, let's work on it. You know, the elections are over. You know, let's not just blame the Republicans because that's the strength of their caucus there. The Democrats were in control, too, and at one point less than 5 years ago. So let's focus on working together. That's what we need to do in order to fix this problem. Taxes are high. Property taxes are high. That's bothersome to a lot of property owners. But, you know, it's irresponsible for anybody to believe that someone in either party wants a worse education for anybody in our great state. We want to produce, you know, very educated people, and we want them to stay here. And we want them to have jobs that they can do and be able to support their families. Joe mentioned earlier, you know, it's going to take a while for any of these mining jobs to come in. Well, that's an investment. You know, when it takes a while before you see a return, that's an investment, and that's what we're looking at as far as the mining bill goes, is making an investment. Obviously, if it's going to create an issue with Native Americans or any environmental issues or anything else, it's worth, you know, taking the time to make sure we do it right. You know, I don't believe we should just rush into any kind of investment. That's why Wall Street happens the way it does. People don't think things through. So I'm not saying or condoning we need to rush into anything, but it's an investment that needs to be made for the future, bringing new jobs and helping things out here in the state of Wisconsin. So I think it's still worth looking at, just making sure we do it right.
What's going to happen with health care? I know Governor Walker has about a week to decide if he's going to set up these health care insurance exchanges, otherwise the federal government will. Does the legislature have anything to do with that, or is there anything else with health care that you all may be looking at this year?
The governor needs to implement the law. Now, if he chooses not to, the federal government will do it. I would much rather sit down and come up with something that we can tailor to some of the specifics of Wisconsin. Again, this is a classic. Again, this is what frustrates me sometimes about when we have these things. The law has been passed. We have a policy. Let's implement the policy. And this, again, I could go into a number of things, but this is a classic example. Guess what? Didn't work out. We should have been doing this already because now what? We've got a week to go. There's no reason that we couldn't have been working to put in place the necessary exchanges. It would have been good for the citizens of the state. You know, sometimes you just got to swallow and deal with it. You can't let your ideology get in the way of implementing the policy and the law. And that's – it's unfortunate, and I think it's one of the things that, again, I do find frustrating about Madison is this sort of – we don't like it, so we're not going to do it. Our ideology won't accept that. I could tell you some interesting stories about that, but we don't have time here. Just about talking about state demographics and somebody saying, "Well, that's not true," and it's like the demographer's sitting there saying, "Well, yes, it is." One of the great myths is we lose retirees. We don't. We gain them because they're moving here from Illinois and Wisconsin and Minnesota. We're discussing that, and somebody said, "Well, that's not true," and well, this is what it's showing, and it's not what my ideology tells me. Well, guess what? That's the way the world works.
Joe Heim?
I think that might be some indication of whether there's some potential for moderation around here. The governor first said that regarding the affordable health care, the exchanges, which I'm not real familiar with, but I know you were supposed to do it, he said, "Well, we'll wait for the Supreme Court decision," and that came, and it was on the side of constitutionality of health care. Then he said, let's wait till the elections and see if the Romney people could take over. They could dump Obamacare. Well, both of the things haven't happened. So the next, and by the way, we lost $37 million in the process because the federal government was going to throwing away $37 million because of ideology strikes me as not an appropriate thing to do. So we could either implement something that would fit Wisconsin better, and everybody I talk to thinks that there are things that are very specific that would work better in the state, or let the feds do it. Well, if you let the feds do it, it's going to be a national model of some kind. It may not fit the state particularly well. And I don't see that as a very – it's a viable solution if you be totally an ideology in politics. But if you want to do something for the state, you do it – you design your own basically. And I'm sort of hopeful that they will recognize that and do it. That'll give us a clue as to whether this ideological fight is going to continue. We're going to play this federal fight state game, or whether or not we're going to work on what's good for the state.
I'm wondering if you all have final thoughts on the outlook of the upcoming legislative session, the outlook for the state of Wisconsin. Julian Bradley?
Well, first,
briefly.
Sure. I just wanted to say, in true bipartisan support, I actually agree with both of the gentlemen. I think it's a great opportunity, and we need to.
We could be a model for the state.
As far as healthcare goes, you know, let's tailor something to the state. Obviously, it's going to stick, so let's find a way to make it work best. As far as outlook goes, I don't think 2010 was an anomaly. I don't think 2012, I don't think Tuesday was much of an anomaly. I think we're a swing state. I think there's a lot going on. If it was such an anomaly, we wouldn't have recaptured the state Senate. We still have control of the Assembly, and we still have a Republican governor who was reaffirmed earlier this year. Outlook is very good. You know, President Obama used it. Bill Feehan used it, more bipartisan support. The best is yet to come. We're coming out of this recession. We're going to come out of unemployment, although it's still not anywhere near where we need it to be, but outlook is good.
Joe Heim, briefly.
Julian said and talked about the governor and leadership, and it has come from the top, and I agree with that. I'm reminded that the governor is going to run for re-election in 2 years. This budget that is going to come this spring is a governor's budget which sets him up for re-election. If it's a highly partisan budget, continuation of the ideological fights, I'm not sure that sets him up real well. I've already seen some indication that he's already moderating his views. He's starting to reach across the aisle a little bit more, talking about moderation. He's talked about refunding education, for example, which I'm hopeful that this is an indication that he wants to be reelected, and this budget will, in fact, set him up. I think the budget itself will tell us a lot about where we're going.
And Representative Chris Dano.
I think I agree with Joe. I think you know, like I said, what the budget that comes out is going to tell us a lot. That is always the biggest bill we pass. It's a budget is not just a budget. It's about what your priorities and what your moral priorities are in many ways. So we will see. I'm in this business ultimately because I'm an optimist. Quite frankly, I will probably no longer. If you see me leave this business, I'm not optimistic. So if I'm here, I think hopefully things are going to go well.
Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau, UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim, and La Crosse County Republican Chair Julian Bradley. Thank you all for joining us today. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse.